The Pattering, submitted by Aiden.
Hey, Nick and Edie. Started listening to your podcast like 6 months ago. Finally caught up. I'm ready to tell my story. My story starts off in my childhood home when I was about 11. Now I'm 17. This house has a little bit of a backstory. The old owners had a basement full of deceased animals. Diseased animals. It's rumored that their spirits haunt the house to this day. One night, I was woken up to a pattering on the hardwood downstairs. This one has startled me. But something about it felt unsettling, unnatural. I got up and walked down the stairs. As I'm walking down the stairs, the sound is getting louder. Now I'm hearing a sound that's almost like a dog's nails running across the hardwood. I feel obligated to walk down the stairs. As I hit the bottom of the stairs, just after the last step, all the sounds stop. In my 11-year-old head, I thought it would be smart to run back upstairs and get my parents, but they thought I was crazy. To this day, they joke about the story. Sometimes I see them, or overhear them at night, talking about sounds that they keep hearing at night. I don't know how to convince them. Any thoughts? Big fan. Love the podcast. Aiden.
Welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick podcast. This is the podcast where two comedians read scary stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies, like Aiden. Thank you for submitting that story, Aiden. This podcast does have a few little bits of commentary after the stories, so if you don't like that, you can watch our Just the Terror episodes, which are right here where you're listening to True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick. If you want to submit your story like Aiden did, you can do it on the Facebook group, the Instagram, or on the website, all with True Scary Stories, all at True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick.
Yep.
That was really good. Okay. So, Aiden, thank you for submitting this story. I think your parents do know that there's something going on. They don't want to scare you. I don't think it's about convincing them. I think the fact you've already overheard them talking about it, I think they don't want to bring attention to it out of fear that it will A, traumatize you, or B, make things worse. Nick?
Which parent? That's what I want to know. He sounds like a dad thing to do, to keep picking on you, where the mom's like, leave him alone. Well, I mean, who told you the backstory? First off, whoever told you the backstory should convince your parents. You know, yeah, you're 11. They don't want to tell you. I don't know why you felt obligated to go down the stairs, but gladly you've lived 6 years longer after being obligated to follow scary sounds. So good on you for staying alive.
Aiden's alive. Aiden's alive.
Oh, there you go.
All right, let's keep going. Today's topic is the back rooms. You guys highly requested that we cover this. This is more of a creepypasta thing, but very scary, so let's get into it. The first story is called Listening for the Ding, and it is written by the Reverend Ginger.
I almost spent a whole week in the back rooms. At least I think it was almost a week. I can't quite tell the time anymore. I did have my phone with me the whole time I was in there, but one minute it would be 12 o'clock, the next would be 3 hours later. This actually continues to happen to me even though I'm out now. A few nights ago, I went to bed in my apartment and woke up in a lift. That's the first place I remember looking at my phone during the experience. I still had internet, but everything I looked up was, I don't know how to say it, just not correct. The lift was recognizably, but different. I couldn't put my finger on it. For starters, I didn't know how I'd managed to get in that metal cube, and somehow the lights were darker. Ding, the lift's door slid open. The first thing to hit me was the smell. It smelled like really old fabric and carpet, mixed in with something metallic in the air, and the hum of fluorescent lights were intense, as were my fears. I took a tentative step out of the lift to see if my fears were confirmed. My heart pounded in my chest. I took in my new environment. The stained yellow wallpaper, the exposed electrics. I took another step. I could feel the carpet rebound beneath my feet, like moss on a tree root. Ding! The lift's door was now shutting. I turned around. I ran back towards it. But by the time I got there, the lift's door had just vanished. All that remained was wallpaper. I hammered at the wall, trying to break through or something, thinking maybe action will bring the lift back. For all I knew, though, it's gone for good. Looking at my phone for internet connection was deceiving. I was still receiving some type of internet, just not connecting to anything I was trying to connect to. I started to hear some faint noises through the wall. So faint, I wondered if I was just making it up. I leaned against the wall that I walked out of. I can't tell you for how long. I just didn't want to get too far in case the lift came back. That, and I was terrified of what might be down the corridors in my new environment. The hum of the lights started driving me mad. Thoughts of survival flooded in my head. Good God, what am I going to do for food and water? How long will I be in here? Am I actually still alive, or... I turned off my phone to save battery. I knew I had to find a way out. I decided I should take a look down the corridor. The only concern, I'll never see the lift again. I took my jacket off and left it on the floor as a marker. I walked what felt like miles in one direction. It felt like a day had passed. I did find my way back to my jacket. Same wall. Still no lift. So I decided to go the other way. Mostly the same again. Only this time, I found something. A flask of herbal tea and two fresh ham sandwiches, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Someone had obviously somehow misplaced their lunch. It was enough to keep me going. Still starving, but determined that whatever hellish limbo these back rooms are, I would escape. I'd become acclimatized to the hum, to such an extent that I could only hear it when trying to sleep or when really focusing on it. It felt like another day went by, so it would have been day 3 if I could have kept track. I heard something. I don't know what it was. It didn't sound human, but still could have been something similar. It started out as a tapping on the wall. At first, I thought it was just more echoes like I heard before. But this was different. It started as a low, rhythmic tapping, then a scraping sound, then the tearing of paper. I was tempted to call out a simple hello, but the place wasn't right. So I assumed that the things in it aren't right either. After what felt like half a day going by, I summoned the courage to check out the source of the noise. Sure enough, I found it. I walked about a mile down the hallway. I found one of the sections of these back rooms completely trashed. It smelled worse than my last location. The air tasted worse. The walls were covered in God knows what. The fluorescent was an extra intense yellow. I didn't like it. The most disturbing part? The source of the tearing sounds. A section of the yellow wallpaper had been ripped, revealing the plaster. Underneath, two words. Come back. I ran out of there as fast as I could, back towards my home unit. As I did so, I felt the stench go away and the hum died down. The lighting returned to normal. Another day passed. Day 4. I never realized how much I valued food when all I've had to eat in the past 3 days was a ham sandwich and some tea. I tried searching for more, but nothing. I also heard the tapping, tearing sound again. I didn't want to investigate it this time. It was this day I felt my first sense of hopelessness. I wanted to cry. Maybe that's why the carpets were so damp. The tears of the other people that this infernal place has trapped. As I walked back to my original spot, I saw something out of the corner of my eye. A bald man lying on the floor, eyes shut. I wondered if he was sleeping. But when I saw what had happened, I turned and ran. He had one large wound to the middle of his abdomen. The carpet was somehow impervious to his bloodstains. Nonetheless, I now knew for certain that I wasn't alone. Something was doing its best to get rid of these unfortunate enough to fall through the cracks. I ran back to my safe spot. Running got harder. Day 5. I saw another murder scene, similar to the last, and I began hearing more things. Sounded like they're getting closer to me. I was so hungry I was tempted to commit cannibalism just for the sake of survival. When people hear what happened, they surely wouldn't blame me. I don't even know if I'm sane anymore. Can insane people tell that they're insane? I'm surprised I've kept my head this long. I'm scared I might lose a few limbs if I'm not careful. But I was still listening to the ding of the lift. Finally, after another half day, ding, I heard a ding a few doors down from me. I ran towards it. Stop, I shouted. Wait. I rounded a corner. There it was, a shiny silver lift door with a woman inside it. She was tall with dark hair, looking just as confused as I was when I first got here. Out of breath and hungry, I said, "Don't get out, please." I ran towards her. "Just wait until I get in. This place is evil." She looked me up and down, put a hand on my shoulder and asked, "Bloody hell, what happened to you?" I gasped for air as I stepped over the silver threshold. "You wouldn't begin to believe." "What is this place?" she asked. "These are the back rooms. Hell, basically. I'll explain it all once this lift starts moving." The lift's door took an unusually long time to close. I was worried we were stuck together. I decided to push the closed door button. As I did so, the lights in the lift flickered. The hum of the lights became deafening. I was blinded by the shattering of a fluorescent tube outside. But sure enough, as we both started to be able to see again, the lift doors had slid shut. "What floor?" I asked. "Number 9, she replied. The lift took us right there. I stepped out, took a deep breath of that fresh, non-recycled air. Then I said, "Now if you give me a cup of tea, I'll tell you all about what just could have happened."
All right, so This is reminding me a lot of the elevator game.
Yeah, very much so.
Once I heard the lift, which means elevator in the British language.
Good job. Yes, very true.
The lift. It sounds a lot like the elevator game, which was the scariest episode I think we did. To me, it was. I couldn't sleep. We couldn't sleep for days. But it sounds like the place you go when you play the elevator game. And you have only like a few seconds to go before you can come back.
Yeah.
And the elevator game is supposed to be real.
Yeah.
While this is a story, the elevator game is supposed to be real. You are supposed to be able to go to this place. So this is kind of based on somewhat of a true legend.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is scary.
Is that all you got to say about that?
The guy asked for a cup of tea after all that.
Because he was going to the lift.
Yes, he was very, very English.
And he was like, that was really scary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? In the next room, written by One Time Rocket 13.
Every so often, I'll end up in the back rooms. I'll find myself wandering down endless halls that look like they were pulled straight out of hotels. Just like hotel hallways, there are usually a uniform setup of doors lining them. Sometimes, behind these doors, screams and cries can be heard. But the doors are always locked tight, so I'm never able to get into them. One time, though, while walking home from school, I was ripped out of a reality and forced back into the back rooms. I had a very thick textbook with me. I wandered around for a while until I found one of those hotel-like segments. I searched for a door with crying behind it. It took me a while, but I eventually found a door with what sounded like light crying emanating from beyond it. It sounded like how someone cries when they just got a phone call telling them that their mother died and that they're trying to hold back tears, but they come out anyway. So I did what any sane person would do. I took out my textbook and started going at the doorknob. As I hit it, a quiet ringing noise started to emanate from the knob. Every time I hit it, the ringing got louder. Still, I was determined to see what was beyond that door, so I kept at it. I kept hitting and bashing the knob until the ringing sound drove out all sense of thought. At that point, though, I couldn't even remember why I was there. The only thing I could think of was destroying that knob. The more I hit it, the more my arms hurt, the more the book began to break, the more the ringing began to take over my psyche. Then finally, the knob came off. The ringing stopped. I could think again. The only things that I could hear were my heart and the crying on the other side. I put my aching arm on the door. I pushed it open. The door slowly creaked open to reveal a blank, blank space. It had that ominous feeling of a dark room in your house that you've been in countless times, but you still have an irrational fear of it for no reason. I went against my instincts and walked in. I was surprised to find that there was solid ground. Thinking back on it, I probably imagined the solid ground part. I kept walking in, slowly and cautiously, taking note that my footsteps made no noise on the ground. Then I realized that the crying was still going, but I couldn't find where it was coming from. I turned around to look back at the door. As soon as I did, it closed. The crying got more and more intense. It from a stifling cry to an out-of-control sob, to incomprehensible screaming. As it grew in magnitude, more voices joined in on the cacophony of distress. The cries were coming from every direction. Some sounded very off. Some sounded like they were right in my ear. But no matter where I looked, I couldn't see anything. Then it happened. You know how when you go out of bounds in a video game, you look back at the world and you can see through the walls and places? Imagine that, but combined with the black hole scene from Interstellar. I could suddenly see millions of different parts of the back rooms. I could see the people within it. I saw people that were lost, crying out for help getting out. I saw people being attacked by countless malformed, unimaginable entities, begging for a savior or an end. I saw the people that had found no escape from the back rooms. We're driven mad by the incomprehensible, ever-changing, infinite, mind-bending spaces that exist in the back rooms, screaming at the walls as they wandered. Then it ended. It felt both nearly instantaneous and like several years worth of time had passed. I don't know if I am worse for the experience or not, but I can say that I found what cries behind the doors. It's the pain and suffering of someone wandering the back rooms, someone who just wants to go home and be done with this. Their horrifying existence in a non-reality where the distress lasts forever, and there's nothing that they can do to stop it. Take this as a cautionary tale. Do not try to go into these rooms like I did. If you find one and you take interest in it, just sit down next to it and listen to their cries. Don't try to intervene. Sadly, as I write this, I hear someone crying in the next room.
Yeah, I think that the reason that this is so requested and this is like so captivating to so many people is because we experience the kind of back rooms in reality. Like, you ever go to like a hospital and it's late at night, maybe you're visiting someone in the ER or something and there's nobody around, but you're in this hospital and there's fluorescent lights and it's just got that feeling like you shouldn't be there. That's kind of the reality of the back rooms.
Or the hallways of a parking garage.
I was going to say a parking garage late at night. A parking garage late at night or a parking garage during the day when it's just silent.
Yeah, and you're
like the only car in there.
Yeah, the only car.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you turned into a car for this.
Okay, all right.
We've all experienced that kind of feeling that you're not supposed to be there or you're in some kind of danger. And I think that's kind of what the back rooms is. It's that sense that you're somewhere you're not supposed to be. And not to mention dreaming. We've all been to these places in dreams.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, is this a dream? Because something feels a little bit off. Like, I shouldn't be. This is not right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the, also I think the fear of purgatory. You know, just being stuck somewhere and not knowing how to get out. Or it is for some hell. You know, being either lonely or being chased or something like that. So... That yes, you're right. That is why these stories were so engaging to so many people.
All right, let's keep going. How to visit the back rooms.
I know of a reliable, though time-consuming way to get to the back rooms. Find a house or an apartment with as many rooms as possible. Ideally, at least a dozen. It helps that the entire thing is only one floor. Or, if at the very least, each individual floor has many rooms. Live in the house by yourself for a few weeks without ever leaving. 2 months will give you the best results. Longer than that, it's probably unhelpful. You'll need to stock up on food. Do not have guests over. Do not leave for any reason. Do not look outside. Use something to block the windows. Do not speak to anyone on the telephone, etc. Keep all doors in your house open at all times, except the ones leading outside, of course. Make an effort to visit every room every day, and if possible, use them all for something. Sleep in the bedroom, make meals in the kitchen, have a designated room to relax in, read in, exercise in, and do all this every day. Live normally to the extent that you can in isolation. At this point, you'll need an appropriate transition room. Choose a room for this purpose according to these rules. The room should have as many doors to other rooms as possible. The room should not have any doors to the outside of the house. The room cannot be your bedroom or any room you routinely sleep in, either at night or for naps. The room should have as few pieces of furniture, especially appliances or electronic devices, as possible. Close every door in your house, ending with the door of your transition room. Do not leave this room from now on. Bring as little food as possible, preferably none, but some water is advisable, just so that your thirst instinct does not drive you too quickly out of the room. If you must bring food that you have not routinely eaten while living in the house. Small snack items you save for the exclusive purpose, which you can carry on your person. Sleep on the floor when you're tired. As mentioned before, you must not use a bedroom. If there is any furniture that would provide more comfortable sleep, ignore it. Keep the lights on at all times, even when asleep. If you have no dreams, or alternatively, only very simple dreams where people appear, but not locations, this is a strong sign that the process is working. If you did bring food or water, pay very close to mind how much is left. If in the morning you find that an empty water bottle has been refilled or that a snack you ate the previous day has come back, you must not eat or drink the new food or water. You might want to label any supplies you bring with you. Label your bottles 1 and 2, 3. If you drink all of bottle 1 and it has water the next morning, do not drink the water in bottle 1. The water in the other bottles is safe. After about a week, when you awaken one morning, every door of your room will be open. But your house will not be beyond them. Instead, you'll be in the back rooms. If 10 days or so pass and you have not transitioned to the back rooms, you can leave or keep trying. If you choose to leave, leave through a random door, then promptly leave through your house through the front door. Walk around, smile, and warmly greet the first person you encounter. Everything should be reset. You can simply return to your regular life. Subsequent efforts to intentionally enter the back rooms may be more difficult than should you attempt them, but unintentional circumstances that lead you there might be more likely. If you choose instead to keep trying rather than leave, know that you are subject to more danger should you continue. You are likely to find yourself in a situation which this guide has no advice for. But if you are determined to continue, there's some things you could try. Knock on one of the doors leading out of your transition room. Knock briskly with medium volume. If you hear nothing in response, try one more time after a brief pause. If you hear anything resembling a voice answering the door, or a sound like the shuffling of feet, as if to suggest someone coming to answer the door, do not knock again, do not close your eyes, and do not turn away. Stare directly and intently at the door, as if you honestly expect it to open. It will not open, and all the noise from the other side will subside shortly. After this, do not knock on any door again. Note that once you've done this, it is foolish to attempt to leave. After another night or two, you will hopefully wake up, transition to the back rooms. If not, you're in uncharted territory. There's no advice I can give, other than wish you luck.
Don't do this. I know we've had very similar rituals that we've explored that do very, very similar things to this. This is all sounding very familiar to a lot of rituals that we've covered, like the elevator game, like the one where you with the doll.
Goodbye,
someone, or hello, someone.
Hello, scary man.
Yes. Goodbye, my soul.
Yeah, something
like that. Did it say you have to find like a vacant place?
I mean, here's the thing. All of this, that whatever they just laid out, sounds absolutely impossible. First off, you have to move in a place that has multiple rooms that you can afford.
In this economy?
Yeah, to live in for 2 months is what they say, you know? And, just enough food to take with you. But if it doesn't work, just go back about your regular life. You can't go back to your regular life after being isolated for 2 months with no telephone, with no contact.
You want to go to the back rooms, let me tell you how to do it. You go to any mall, okay? Go to any mall. You go to a place called Spencer's, right? Spencer's Gifts. You're going to see it's going to have loud music, probably. You go in there, and you ask to go to the back room. The guy's going to say, okay. You're going to walk through a door that's like those bead things, and you're going to be in the back room. And then, whatever happens, uncharted territory.
Yes,
up to you.
We have no advice for you.
Closing Time, written by your D&D guy.
It's late September. You remember these nights. Humid, muggy, just a hint of the coming fall. Too cold for a t-shirt, but too warm for a sweater. These are the nights best spent at Cook Place County Mall in my modest Midwest hometown. A diamond in the rough in my eyes, this shopping center is a break from the monotony of tired hardware stores and family grocers that lined Main Street. The Cook Place Mall is typically packed to capacity, but not tonight. Because it was 8:15 p.m. on a Tuesday night, 45 minutes until close, not exactly prime window shopping hours. Despite that, my three friends and I were still going strong. We were ending the night in the dusty arcade located in the basement of the shopping mall. It was down a short flight of stairs between the Dairy Queen and Sbarro in the food court. Faded and flickering carnival lights lined the dimly lit hallway and steps. Andy, do you have another quarter? Philip, my youngest friend, questioned as the words game over splattered across the screen. Philip was 12 years old and a bit underdeveloped for his age. Andrew, his older brother, my best friend and biology partner, scowled as he rummaged through his pockets in vain. Maybe if you were a bit better at the game, I'd have more quarters for you to play on. It was 8:16 p.m. It seemed our time in the arcade may be coming to a close. I had a few loose quarters left in my pocket, but that was going to stay my secret. I was hoping to spend it on a Coke tomorrow before class started. Clay, a guy Andy and I had just met in biology, had clearly been waiting for this moment. Honestly, you guys, it's getting a bit late. I think I'm going to bounce. Got to study for our exam on cellular reproduction. The exam wasn't for a week yet, but I wasn't bothered. Clay had been acting a bit ambivalent since we got to the mall. Seemed he wasn't a huge fan of having Philip around. Cramped his style or whatever. I didn't care. Philip was pretty much like a brother to me, so he came first. Philip, having realized there would be nary a quarter for him, gave up aimlessly pressing buttons on the greasy machine. I have to go to the bathroom. Didn't you just go? Sighed Andy. Yeah, but we had a large soda. You had a large soda, kid. By the time I got a sip, it was all backwash. I chuckled as Andy and Philip started away from the arcade machines. Clay, while texting, followed lazily behind them. The bathroom we were used to using in the mall on the way out to the front door was closed for renovations, so we had to find another one. It was 8:24. The mall closed at 9 p.m., so we were going to need to get a moving. An L-shaped hallway lit with yellow humming fluorescent lights ended with a corresponding bathroom on either side of the hall. with custodial equipment blocking the women's entrance, we had located a bathroom. Philip rushed into the restroom. Sure enough, as the thought crossed my mind, the ratty old mall intercom crackled to life with a ding-dong. An adolescent male's voice spoke sharply. Mall closing in 30 minutes. Mall closing in 30 minutes. I checked my watch. It's 8:26 p.m. Huh. Someone's in a hurry to get out of here tonight. I thought, well, that's retail. Clay spoke up. I might just get going, you guys. I live pretty close here. I'm just going to walk instead of bus. Good night. Night, Clay, we said in unison. He turned his back and walked away, turning right to depart the mall. Andy and I looked at one another. I don't know, kind of a wet blanket. He seemed really cool when I met him, Andy explained. Nah, he was okay, maybe just a little bit quiet. Texting was a bit annoying, though. Our attention was drawn to the sound of a flush from the bathroom. Andy's face twisted into a mischievous grin. Hey, we should give Philip a little fright when he comes out. Remembering how jumpy Philip tended to be, I felt a pang of guilt. It really wasn't very nice to spook him, and we did it often. Nevertheless, I stood on the other side of the door, opposite Andy, waiting for Philip to step between us, not expecting a thing. The door swung open. Philip stepped out into the hallway, focused on drying his hands on his pants. He stepped by none the wiser. Ah! Andy yelled as we grabbed his shoulder. Philip yelled as he twisted around and fell backwards. Philip fell into the wall, and then Philip fell into the wall. It's the only way I can know how to describe it. One moment he had slipped off his feet and crashed into the wall. The next, everything but his legs had gone through the wall, as if there was a perfectly shaped hole in the concrete. Philip's legs spasmed in the air in the same looping, spastic pattern, but for a few seconds. And then, there's nothing left but solid concrete. What? Andy stuttered as he fell to his knees, his face a mixture of curiosity and confusion. As he shuffled towards the wall, his face turned to fear. I don't understand. Philip! He shouted his brother's name with a desperate, wavering cry. Philip! He slammed his hands into the wall once, twice, not a third time. Andy's head now protruded from the wall, facing the ceiling. His head seized from side to side as he continued to scream for his brother. God, he sounded like he was yelling through a box fan. I stepped backwards as my best friend disappeared from sight. I was left with his scream bouncing off the hallway walls, intensifying as it mixed with the hum of the fluorescent. The howl of the fluorescent, my back pressed against the bathroom door, and I jumped. I screamed as my world exploded with static, deafening and blinding me. The noise was unbearable, the grain obscured everything, and all at once, it stopped. I clutched my head in my hands, eyes squeezed shut. The static had dissipated, but was replaced with the hum of fluorescent lights, the all-too-familiar yellow glow coming through my eyelids. But there was something new, a smell that hadn't been there before, the musty, wet smell of carpet. Carpet that should have been changed decades ago. The smell reminded me of the dilapidated bowling alley down from the road by the mall. I opened my eyes. Before me was the bathroom hallway, as expected, lit by the same light as before. The bathroom doors were gone. There were no more doors, no more custodial equipment, just a smooth slab of concrete. I got to my feet and looked around at me cautiously. It seemed like I was in the mall still, but it was quiet. It felt different. The fluorescent hum buzz was too loud. My ears itched. I walked down the hallway in the direction of the food court. As I turned the corner, I was met with, not the opening to the food court as expected, but another abrupt 90-degree turn, turning to the left. Ding dong. I froze.
What did I tell you about the mall?
Yep.
The mall is definitely a portal to the back rooms.
Especially now when they're all deserted.
Yeah, especially now they've got that eerie backroom feeling.
They were used to energy and now they want the energy of people back, so they steal people.
And it's also like parallel dimensions. There is a back room. There is a version, like I always say, there's a version of you and me in a parallel dimension that we are in a mall right now.
Oh, no.
So these places do exist somewhere.
I worry sometimes that every time we talk about this, yes, there is a version of us that goes into whatever we're talking about, but we are lucky to still not be in it.
But that's them.
No.
That's them. Oh, well.
Okay, well, there's a part two to this story.
All right, let's keep going. All right, we are on to the last story, which is the second part. Before we do that, don't forget to at us and submit your scary story to us on the Facebook group, the Instagram, or the website, which are all at True Scary Stories with Edie. Even just join the Facebook group because we have a ton of fun. Don't forget to give us 5 stars after this. We work super hard on this and it would mean the world to us. We love it. And Nick, where are you going to be this week?
So tomorrow I'm going to be in, May 5th, I'm going to be in Billings, Montana. And then May 6th, I'll be in Bozeman. May 7th, I will be in San Diego at the Laugh Factory for 2 shows, as long as my flight comes in time. And then next week, I will be in Charlotte, North Carolina, Saturday, with Michael Yo. And other dates coming up include everything from San Diego to San Diego to San Diego. So a lot of San Diego's actually coming up for some reason.
That's great. I'm going to be in Dallas by myself without Nick. I'm headlining TK's Comedy Club in Dallas on May 15th.
Yes, for Rudy Ramsey.
Yay, thank you, Rudy. And then May 17th is my birthday. So
send
gifts, you know, yeah. Venmo.
If you guys can think of anything to get her, let me know.
I'll give you a list to choose from.
Okay, good.
And make sure you get the receipt.
All right, we'll do.
Okay, part two.
The mall loudspeaker was engaged. The empty air of the speaker nearest to me told me that. That familiar hum is something about to be announced. The operator collecting their thoughts first. But the operator had nothing to say. After a motionless moment, what felt like hours, the microphone snapped back into the console, cutting the empty noise. Whomever had activated the speaker seemed to have hung up. Confused and growing ever more frightful of where I had found myself, I turned the corner. I was met with a large empty room that I'd never seen before. It was about the size of a classroom with stained concrete walls. The smell of must was even stronger in here. Each wall had an identical rectangular door-shaped opening that seemed to be placed at randomly decided positions among the wall. The popcorn ceiling, littered with the smears of dirt and greasy imprints, had long cracks spanning it. This room was clearly in need of renovation. I don't understand, I muttered out loud. I truly didn't. This featureless room served no purpose other than a passageway to these other rooms. The lack of planning and absent attempt at caring for the room made me feel as if this place was long forgotten. Might as well try the next room, I thought to myself, as I walked through the door to my left. The room I found myself in was as bleak and unrecognizable as the last. From my first glance, the only difference in style was that this room was shaped as a triangle. I heard a single cry from my right. It's more of a whimper, actually. What the? Was Clay's voice. Couldn't be Clay. I watched him leave the mall. I rushed to the door to find Clay lying in a fetal position in a long hallway stretching the distance to my left and right. Change the channel. Change the channel, Clay babbled incoherently as he sobbed on the floor. Clay, you gotta get up. Clay didn't respond to me. He never would. His eyes, wide and unblinking with fear, were glued to the floor. How can fluorescent lights be so noisy? And then I saw it. And then I felt it. It hung motionless in the air, feet lightly scraping the ground. It had dry, cracked skin that was dressed loosely with torn, rough-spun shorts. It had the torso of a man, but its torso was on the wrong way. Its frail and feeble arms outstretched to the ceiling, not quite reaching, as if in an act of surrender. It had a cocked head as if confused, as it peered down the hallway at me. Dark, beady eyes stared widely at me through the holes in the bloody duct tape wrapped around its head. And then it started to float towards us. Every time I blinked, stunned in absolute terror, it was not where I expected. A few feet forward, some inches to the left, never where it should be. And yet it was getting closer, ever closer. What I saw next will follow me forever. I turned to run, breaking the stillness, and sprinted down the hallway. I don't know, I guess I just assumed Clay would follow me in the moment. I was wrong. A blood-curdling screech shook the hallway, and I ripped around. It had reached Clay. He still wasn't looking, but he certainly was screaming. It extended its long, spindly arms and cradled him like a child. But it wouldn't look away from me. No, its eyes never left mine. In one quick jerking motion, it was holding Clay by the top of its head, palming him like a basketball. I blinked, and it had grasped Clay's arm with its free hand. With brute strength, it twisted Clay by the torso. Clay's screaming was cut short with a fleshy crunch as he dropped to the floor in a twisted pile. His eyes had finally opened to look at me one last time. Then I screamed. The louder I screamed, the louder the fluorescent hum became. Which was louder? I couldn't tell. I turned and ran to the first door I saw, blindly twisting and turning through the rooms that followed. Why on earth does every room look the same? I turned a corner and ran face first into a dark mass. We both fell to the floor. Andy? How did you get here? Where are we? I don't know, Andy. Where's Philip? We have to get him now and leave. We turned and rushed down a third hallway, perpendicular to the hallway Andy and I met in. We ran until we felt we could run no more, and then fell into a final doorway. We landed in a mass on the damp floor and quickly scuttled to the back wall. The hum of the lights is all we could hear, louder and louder. And then they all went out. Silence. We found ourselves in total darkness, in total silence, as we clutched each other. No, wait, not total silence. The sound of static, as if emitting from a television, slowly coming toward us. Only when the light, coming from the source of the noise, started to slowly illuminate the room did I realize. This room had only one door. It floated around the door frame, toes dragging on the floor as it cast its bloody eyes upon us. Andy and I, mute with fear, stood against the wall. Andy moved himself in front of me. It floated towards us. Andy raised his arms. It reached us out for us. Leave us alone! Ding dong. We all became statues. We locked eyes with it as we listened to the intercom crackle to life. Shallow, rapid breathing came through the speaker. Andy? It's Philip. With a guttural scream, Andy lunged towards it. I fell backwards into the wall as I landed inside of a trash can. What? I was inside a trash can? Filled with a refuse from a full day of food court disposal. Kid, what are you doing here? I looked out to see a very confused elderly janitor wondering why a young man was taking a Sbarro bath after mall hours. It was 9:32 p.m. At least that's what the clock over the water fountain said. The water fountain? I'm back in the mall. Oh, sorry, I was just hungry. And I ran. In the following years, I would try to make sense of what happened in that back hallway. I even went as far as returning there, trying to access that place, but to no avail. I never found a thing, but I kept trying until they demolished the mall a year later. Philip and Andy's parents weren't really present when they were around, so they didn't make much of a deal on TV when they were interviewed, despite the media trying to fire them up. They just seemed like it was the final straw to send them to total apathy. Last I heard, Clay's parents moved out of town, but were paying exorbitant PI bills to find their son. After a few years of half-detective work and a few rotations of milk cartons, Andy and Philip were forgotten by our sleepy little town. But sometimes, when I'm going to sleep, I remember. And I leave the TV on Channel 3. There's nothing broadcasting on that channel, but the static helps me sleep.
All right, very creepy. And the thing that's creepiest about it is that these kinds of creatures and these kinds of situations we've heard about in real testimonies of people saying this actually happened to me. Like I'm seeing a lot of parallels between the story and stories that people have submitted to us saying this happened to me.
Yeah.
And I think that these places do exist. I think that that's where creatures live that we don't always get to see here, and that they can pass through these planes, the kind of like weird other universe and our universe. And that's why we don't see them all of the time. But I think that's where these creatures are. I think there is like parallel universe that they can go in and out of, kind of like this. And I think it's just not a good thing to mess with. And I think that instead of like actually going missing with some of this stuff, you can get trapped in your own mind in these places and just be considered mentally ill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, exactly. Everything that we fear is inspired by something real. And if you kind of think about history, the way that people had described like alligators, these monsters with metal teeth and stuff like that, it's hard for humans to properly describe what they're seeing when they've never seen it before. So like this monster with duct tape over its eyes, well, that's what, you know, they thought was duct tape. And, you know, I've heard stories about people meeting demons in different places and being approached about enter this room and your life will change. So you're right. A lot of reality in this, a lot of time displacement, a lot of glitches, a lot of, you know, possible, like, just insanity. I mean, I wonder what people who go insane think when they kind of have these memories haunt them. But scary stuff.
Yes, very scary. And it also reminds me of the girl who was, who had a sister who was mentally, I didn't get to hear that story. She was like nonverbal, or she was very learning disabled.
Okay.
And then her sister said sometimes she would wake up from that for like 3 minutes and be normal and be and say, "Hey, I'm trapped here. Like, I can't get out of my own mind." And then she would go back to being disabled.
Oh no.
For a while. Wild. Yeah. That was like the freakiest story that I've ever heard. And it kind of reminds me of when humans go along these different planes that they're not supposed to exist in, that it seems like that could cause some real breaks in your ability to exist on this plane with just normally.
Yeah, and the idea of like people with multiple personality disorders or sleepwalkers and things like that being trapped in their own brain and their body just moves without, you know, the whole multiple personality disorders, you know, who is the actual personality? Who may be trapped?
Yeah, I like how you said, if you want to think about history a little bit. And I was like, you know what? I will a little bit, but not too much. Anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening to this very scary episode. I will be driving up the power bill tonight, sleeping with the light on.
Well, that hum, the fluorescent hum.
That's the worst, and I hate that sound too. And it's scary to think about that sound starting or ringing in your ears and it never going away and no one being able to stop it or know why.
And there's no way to get to channel 3.
Wait, channel 6, PBS.
Well, the whole idea of Channel 3 was like you would turn that on to use your VCR, your Nintendo, your things like that.
Oh, I didn't have any of those things. But thank you guys for listening to this episode. Very freaky. We love you. Stay safe. Come check us out and our stand-up shows. Wash your hands. We'll see you on the Facebook group. And don't forget to give us 5 stars.